CliffCentral.com. This is our business masterclass for the next hour. And what's interesting is while we do it, we have an SME audience, a couple of SME owners sitting in the hub, looking at us, listening to us. So at any time, Kevin gives me a signal and one of them asks a question of the panel. And they can pitch their business. We want them, in fact. That's the rule. They've got to pitch their business for about 30 seconds max before they can engage the panel. But our first half hour is all about product design, quality, and testing of new products. Last week, we spoke of measurement of sales performance. Good podcast, that. You can get that. We had a great expert in also talking to us about sales performance and measurement. But today, product design, quality, and testing. Our special guest, but first, Richard, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thanks, Andrew.
Richard Angus, CEO of the finance team. And we've got Alice in the studio still with us as well. Our guest is Brian Steinhobel. He's a preeminent international industrial designer who has built, he's got a very interesting background. He's built a comprehensive global network for taking products to global markets over the last 36 years. Whilst operating not just in South Africa, Bryanston, Johannesburg, but United Kingdom, and also from Austria. Brian works with and for major corporations such as BMW, Bang & Olufsen, Unilever, designing from, listen to this, supermarket trolleys, supercars, and super yachts. So a broad range of interesting designs that he's involved with. So welcome to our studio, Brian Steinhobel.
Thank you and good afternoon to the audience.
So you've been around, you've done a lot, and we're happy to have you in the studio. All right, Richard Angus going to lead the conversation, and our SME interview, the second half, is on a much smaller scale, of course. We're going to talk to Nkobile Nkosi of NQ Jewelry, which is all about design, isn't it? But it's at a very basic SME level. And he's been in our audience. He's a recipient of the Tsohosan Entrepreneur Program as well, and he's been involved there. So hopefully he's in the studio. If not, we'll have him on the line. Small businessman trying to carve his future, doing something very interesting. All right, Richard, take us away on this conversation.
Yeah, well, Adrian, I think, you know, when we talk about products, I think every business person, you know, they immediately think of the item that they're selling to their clientele. And, you know, everybody goes, oh, well, I've got my product. But the reality in life is that it's actually how your product is differentiated that allows you to command that premium pricing for the product. So, you know, people may turn around and say, well, you know, is one dishwashing liquid the same as the next? Is the same as the next? Well, perhaps it is. Perhaps it isn't. The question will be, what does it look like? How does it operate? How's it going to interact with you as the consumer?
And that emotional level almost as well, eh?
Yeah, and whether you feel that you're connected with the product and it actually it kicks for you. Now, fundamentally, it all comes down to the question of functional value or functional utility and sales appeal. That's what really makes somebody engage with a particular product. Now, the reality is that customers are actually demanding more in terms of product variety, and they're looking for things that stand out. So, Brian, perhaps a good time for us to start with a question to you is, I mean, when we talk about product design, what are we actually talking about? I mean, what you know, it sounds like a very nice loose term, and there's all sorts of other words that are linked with design. Let's just, what is product design in your mind?
Yes, well, design is such a broad word encompassing so many different faculties. The design we're talking about is known as industrial design, which is a bit of an unfortunate word, actually. I prefer the word product development. Mm-hmm. And in product development, you're basically synthesizing art, business, and technology. Mm-hmm. Art in the aesthetic and the beauty of the product, which impacts hugely on emotional pull for a sale. And then the business, obviously, the economics of the product has to be correct. And technology drives everything. That's why we've involved and try and involve myself as much as possible with motor racing, in particular Formula One, because there's and also with aerospace projects, because there you'll find the latest technologies that can change markets and disrupt the solutions to other ones, where we take unlikely combinations of materials and processes, and we cross-pollinate them into unknown or unprevisely used situations where we have a plastic supermarket trolley, which they came about a long time back, but the type of manufacturing process we use at the moment, which is a water melt process, allows for more of a three-dimensional canvas. So from the point of view of synthesizing all these elements, it's a massive task, industrial design and product development, which is very misunderstood from the point of view that people don't realize the depth and impact. You just take, for example, and we are allowed to mention brands, I believe, on a business program, Apple Mac, which you know, Jonathan Ive has been knighted as the designer, Apple Mac, and you won't find many big corporations these days who don't have an industrial designer on the board, or quite a few. And from that point of view,
in South Africa as well.
South Africa's a bit slow in uptake. I find we're 10 to 20 years behind the curve, quite frankly, without even exaggerating on many aspects of things. Some things we're ahead, but certainly when it comes to product development, it's a bit sad, because without a doubt, product design could change this region. It could absolutely save this region. I mean, what was Korea 20 to 30 years ago?
Yeah,
a blip
yeah.
on the map. Look at them today. They're global leaders, and that's 100% through industrial design, not engineering design. There's a combination of engineering design there, but an industrial design nation. Now, you know, we are preached for a long time now, after 36 years of my own company, the virtues of product design. And the government hasn't, sadly, listened yet to the virtues and what can be done with product design in solving our problems down here.
You mentioned the areas that have the latest technology, Formula One, and you also said aerospace,
yes,
and military. America
military,
certainly, military
know,
seems to have it.
We sadly, you know, I'm not criticizing anyone, but sadly, back in the day, yeah, there was a very good military capability of production capability,
yeah,
in terms of the Roy Falk helicopter, and quite frankly, it's a past and gone era. Today, we actually fallen badly behind in many areas.
In the U.S., it's still, I guess, the place where the latest technology.
But military obviously drives product and technology at the forefront. And we are involved with a lot of weaponry design, locally and globally. And it is a very... In South Africa, we see signs of the military here picking up in terms of manufacturing sector. Drones in particular are one great opportunity that could be capitalized on. But they do take good design. It's no use to just following the crowd.
I like that, art, business, and technology.
Okay. All mixed together.
Brian, I just wanted to, you know, go back to the point you make that, you know, industrial design could change the fortunes of this region. I mean, that's
very
fantastic. But why don't we get it then? I mean, if there's this opportunity, is it because the education is not there, or the passion for this is not there? I mean,
well, the actual situation is that it's probably one of the most modern, contemporary professions that come around. You know, accountancy, prostitution, architecture, been around since the beginning of time. This is one of these new professions where, in my position, I have to orchestrate. I'm the conductor of a large orchestra, and in that orchestra, you've got materials, you've got technology, you've got intellectual property, you've got consumers,
true,
you've got anthropometrics and ergonomics, you've got many, many things, you've got marketing, you've got so many faculties that must be orchestrated and combined into a solution that you can't blame for people not for understanding or knowing where it comes from.
Mm-hmm.
And it has been particularly prevalent in this country. When I studied in the 80s, it was an unknown soldier. In fact, I was in the second year in the Navy, in the military, before I discovered the profession. I was already accepted to do architecture at UCT, mm-hmm, and I discovered this golden jewel, what I actually didn't realize existed. And it was very early in the Box Street in down in Doornfontein, where they had a little course running for industrial design. Now it's a four-year degree course at UJ and a few institutions.
But obviously, I think one has to be also quite cognizant of the fact that if there is design to talk about, I mean, Africa, we've always been designing things here. It's just that not to the scale that things get commercialized.
Not really designing. You've got to make a differentiation between arts and crafts and design. There's a massive difference. I think the person who best embraces that is Carol Boyes.
Mm-hmm.
She has arts and crafts combined with now mainstream design, and I love her success. I mean, her products are testimony to that success. But traditionally, we are craftsmen and arts and crafts. That is a big difference to mainstream design,
mm-hmm,
where you're designing with the latest technology and materials globally.
Is that a good foundation, though, Brian?
Yeah, no, we have a
to
great
transition from that to
no,
this.
No, sure. We have a great from the Boermakker-Plan, mm-hmm, syndrome to the ethnic cultural crafts are fantastic combination of a spirited population that has a spirit for design, and we have quite a high incidence of patent applications out of this region, which is a testimony to that as well. So yes, I think it needs good strong leadership in the direction and unlocking of the potential wealth we have. You know, we're a bit stupid. We take gold and platinum, we dig it out the ground, we send it overseas for nothing, we buy it back as jewelry at 1,000 times the cost. That's not a very clever business model. And we've been doing that for more than quite a few decades. So we need to wake up and introduce this design element in between that. We do that with a lot of things. Sasol make wonderful polymer. About time we designed appropriate is the word, products that are conducive to manufacturing with Sasol polymers and export them in mass, just like the Chinese learned to do half a century ago, let alone a decade ago. So, you know, there's exciting things that swim around the area of design for good, wholesome solutions, as in philanthropic solutions, like we're designing toilet for non-waterborne areas. We have a big toilet problem. I think we're 6 million in the red with toilets at the moment as we sit. We got an award 2 years ago for designing a menstrual cup. We got an award for economic empowerment, an agenda award for economic empowerment, because sadly 50 days per annum per lady are lost to the economy, and there's more than 20 million ladies who can't afford a tampon or a pad to deal with menstrual cycle. So these type of things, when you deal with them, we can change the nation, we can change the income, and we can actually save the region.
It's all design and product development.
Yeah, it's all about development.
It sounds biased, but it actually is. obviously, I'm biased from a designer, but it is. So if there was more of a concentration on it.
Now, Brian, I mean, customers expect to receive almost what they feel is a, let's call it a customized product for their use, and yet they want to only pay mass production type prices. How does the world of design work within that ambit?
Well, you know, design must always have a competitive edge, and it must have a novelty value. In fact, to gain a patent, you have to have an element of novelty. So it is novel. It's not, if I'm plagiarizing something, then you can call me a draftsman. Okay. So, you know, you've got to avoid that at all cost. You can unwittingly plagiarize something out of, you know, there's a singularity and a convergence that goes along in the world at the moment. And there's a great book called Singularity is Near. You can read about that. But this convergence does make for overlaps. But certainly the differentiation from one model to the next model must be an improvement of a few things, being cost, convenience, safety, beauty. So each new car model that comes out in the next season or the next year, you can obviously see that there's an improvement of some sort, and a lot of them aesthetic. And we've become quite fickle consumers in that the expectation is very high, which is also justified. I think mobile devices have really contributed to our awareness, and quite frankly, the second biggest investment in most people's life, their vehicle. They become beautifully designed these days with a multitude of choices and benefits, and now our barometer and our consumer is much more highly tuned than they used to be. You find they are more highly tuned in Europe, consumers generally, because they've had longer exposure to good product, and then the expectation is higher. So you've got to deliver quite big time as a designer to improve a product for the whole syndrome to work.
Now, what's the connection between product design and, let's call it, the manufacturing component? Because you can create all these wonderful products, but if they're difficult to manufacture or costly to manufacture, that becomes a problem in the hands of the entrepreneur. So how do you blend those two together in your world?
That is an area in my profession where the men get sorted out from the boys, so to speak. Because with the CAD software you can have these days, beautiful pictures can be made of the most wonderful sort of products, but we call them sky hooks because they're not real. They got a hook on an unrealistic sort of basis. So, you know, although sadly I'm probably the oldest designer in the business in the country, really, it does give you a bit of wisdom and experience of designing with proper manufacturability, with a correct choice of materials, and orchestrating all those elements that have to make it work. So, yes, that's a very big factor to getting something correct.
Okay. So, Brian, just on that point, is it...
Okay,
is
then
it,
we'll take a question from the floor. Alice, quickly.
Is this where, you know, reality, you know, comes to being in terms of what works in the physical world sense than, you know, on the screen, for example?
Yes, very much so. There is an exhaustive process called the design process, which is, people say they want a prototype. We never do one prototype. You know, you can do up to 100 prototypes for a product, exhaustive scientific analysis on the CAD, computer-aided design, and exhaustive prototyping repetitiveness to make sure that the end result is actually brutally, I call it brutal reality. I speak to students about the brutal reality of being brutal to yourself, in that it's got to be real. You've got to be realistic. The center of gravity mustn't be wrong. The cost mustn't be wrong, and all those things. So it is definitely a big factor.
Okay. All right, we've got our live SME audience, and someone wants to pose a question or comment to the panel, but before they do that, they have to pitch their business for 30 seconds. And of course, if you want to join this live audience to be part of this world with our panel, you can just email kevin@leadershipplatform.com, two P's in the middle, or info@leadershipplatform.com. Yes, who's up?
Hello, my name is Carla. My business is called Casa Nyumba. We design and manufacture furniture. We have our own range. We do custom pieces. We do reupholstery. We've just launched an online store, and within that we provide home accessories and decor for your home. And we're also going to be introducing design services. So my question is specifically for Brian. In terms of design, product design, and incorporating that into the manufacturing process, how do you factor in the additional cost of having a designer without it impacting on your final product? And if it's going to impact in your final product, in the price of your final product, how do you justify that to the customer, having them willing to pay more for a well-designed product?
Well, good design will never happen by mistake. So you're going to have to affect in a design, and a designer, and a design process. So that's the starting point. You then a good designer will then examine the type of processes you're using and normally rationalize it. We take sort of an element of design or a component, a product that consists, we did one the other day, it was 12 pieces, which we summarized down to two pieces in a production solution. So yes, design is part of a barrier to entry cost. It's very much of a real cost. And the less you pay attention to it, the more you're going to get stung. Certainly big companies like the Dyson Company, they can invest up to 12% of their turnover. Now, this is exceptionally high, but 12% of turnover, and to 17% actually at the top end, into product development. And without having a product development element, you won't have sustainability. So I'd highly recommend that you get a professional designer to analyze your business and your production, and you'll leapfrog into the future. And then looking for automated mass production processes, where you don't want to be too much of a shop fitter craftsman if you're going to be a furniture manufacturer. There's a big difference.
Okay, how was the pitch, Richard? I didn't get any contact detail or anything.
Yeah, I was going to say, the only thing is I don't know where to get hold of you.
Okay, you can get hold of us online. Our online store is on our website also, www.casanyumba.co.za, and you can give us a call on 083-2000-772.
All right, so that was the first live question from our live panel. Let's keep going with the conversation. Interesting answers there. Yeah.
So, Brian, I mean, one of the things that always comes to mind, and I think it's probably something that we haven't focused on enough historically over many years, is this whole question of, well, I buy the product, I use the product, what do I do with it when I need to dispose of it after, let's call it after use? How does that feature in the whole product design world? Is that becoming a bigger issue in your life?
Not becoming. It's been one of the central issues for any designer as he gets qualified. We're all responsible for cluttering the planet, let's face it. But, you know, some of the things we design go into the millions of repetitive pieces into production. So there's very much a responsibility there, but it's not any responsibility. It's about designing, just for example, packaging. We like to use what we say post-use packaging. You know, I find takeaway food to be pretty despicable in that area. You get this big pile of cardboard and papers and plastic bags at the end of one short meal, which is, that's very questionable. But with product itself, you know, computers, there are ways you can dispose of computers. This country, sadly, is way, way behind the curve, as usual, in terms of things like recycling. You go to Germany, you've got 8 dustbins, you get a guy inspecting that, you get the wrong stuff in your dustbin, you're going to get a heavy fine. So recyclability is a very good thing. I can give kudos and credit to Woolworths. Their black trolleys are all recycled plastic. We call it reground, where you regrind the polymer and you put it to better use. We all know the aluminium can beverage industry now, Bevcan and them, they've got it down to a fine art, where the recovery on the aluminium cans is superb, console glass as well. Yeah. So, you know, there is, it's not like it doesn't go on, but you do feel guilty sometimes, like, wow, I'm throwing this big chunk of stuff away, and now my computer's redundant. I mean, Apple, Mac have a trade-in, you get quite a decent price. I was quite surprised on an old iPhone 4 the other day. Offered, I think it got $1,700 offering on the purchase. You like it exchange too. So things like that. I mean, much more prevalent in Europe and sort of Europe, European countries, but here we're slowly getting it. You know, we got that paper called the we store our paper and gets taken away in a bag called
Ronnie Bin.
Ronnie Bin. I was going to say Tommy. Yeah, but Ronnie Bin. Yeah, that's a good certainly a good thing. And I think it's fantastic where you see the recycle people pushing around these trolleys. But I think that's totally disgusting that they have to push around these big things on tiny little wheels, which are so inappropriate. There have been thrusts at trying to make recyclable collector people vehicles of sorts, and the obvious solution would be a bicycle with a trailer. Come on. I mean, geez, there's an opportunity for someone a great opportunity for some person to have great billboard advertising and these poor guys pushing up a hill in the hot sun. I always want to feel like stop and trying to help them get up the hill. It's ridiculous, you know. And then the proverbial supermarket trolley gets used, which is good for our industry because it's consumerism at the wrong end of the consumer. But
Brian, I've got a question here. I'm curious. Steve Jobs, he said it's really hard to design products by focus groups. A lot of times people don't know what they want until you show it to them. What did he mean by that?
I couldn't agree with him more. You know, there's another guy, Kiyo Morita, who wrote the book Made in Japan. He was the founder of the Sony Corporation. Mm-hmm. And when he actually put out to a focus group market research, not that I'm knocking market research guys, especially in FMCG, fast-moving consumer goods, is a good place for those focus groups and analysis. But, you know, his whole board, Akio Morita, almost wanted to lynch him when he suggested the Sony Walkman. By the invent of neodyne magnets, it allowed headphones to be small and on our ears for the first time. And he suggested what became the Sony Walkman, and he nearly got fired off his own board for that. But he overrode the pressure, and he insisted that his gut feel was right, and it became the sort of iPod of the 80s, let's face it, the Walkman. So there's a good example of what you're saying there, where the focus groups can be misleading. You can just get a people on a bad day in a bad part of the history of the country who are feeling a bummer and they're not giving the right answers. Mm-hmm. So I prefer from designing within. Design is very intellectualized.
Intuitive.
It's very intuitive and it's very intellectual, and a designer must base all his many years of experience. I say designers only mature after years of age of 40, so I've been mature for the age of for 16 years now. But certainly you got a lot of faculties to bring together, so your solutions will be inherently well-founded. Mm-hmm. But certainly giving a solution to something that doesn't exist is our business. So you can't expect people to give sensible answers in a focus group. And that's why I find them misleading. So I could agree with Steve Jobs 100%, where it's up to us guys, the designers and inventors, and we invent and design, and we're creatives really. There's another word there that gets left out of it, where we're creating a multi-dimensional solution, because it's not only physical touch products. In fact, our cell phones are going to disappear. We won't be holding that in your hand in 5 years' time, I can tell you now. You're going to have body tech and body electronics, like the Microsoft HoloLens and Google Glass was slightly misfounded. But yes, definitely focus groups can be misleading from a solution point of view, because those people don't know about unknown technologies and things like that.
Really, 5 years?
I'd hope less. I'm being quite conservative in that.
So for the listeners, Adrian is grabbing onto his cell phone.
Like my identity. So what are you saying? It's going to be what? It's going to be like part of our...
products will disappear. When we do our job properly, products will disappear. Like, for example, medicine will be through a body tech bangle or watch, where a wafer will be put into the watch, and the medicine, instead of taking a pill every day, you'll have a month wafer, And that anti-statin, if you've got cholesterol, or statin, if you've got cholesterol, will permeate into your body through a permeation process. And there's many, many things like that, you know.
With satellites tracking you and...
No, not necessarily.
It sounds like an Orwell novel coming here.
No. Well, we're involved at the front line of this, redesigning 5 to 10 years. We are futurists. But it's a wonderful place to be. If you just go into and look at the Microsoft HoloLens, that's where our future lies. We will be wearing devices that you've seen through and semi-seen through and interacting with. And we're getting there fast. I mean, the watches are now doing a lot for us. But it's very exciting because, quite frankly, Steve Jobs said he gave us our one hand back when he got rid of the stylus. We will get both hands back when we get rid of the phone. And we will be blinking and winking and touching parts of our body, and things will happen. But we will primarily be looking through a lens interface between the outside world. The cyber world will be captured between us, and that's what the HoloLens does. Very exciting.
Is it similar to Google Glass?
It is. Google Glass was slightly premature.
Okay.
It was deemed to be too invasive, and it sort of had a misfire on marketing. But it was one of the founding. It was one of the Model T Fords that of what's coming out of the future.
Okay, I'm realizing we should have you on another show and just really talk about this kind of stuff.
It's very exciting.
Very, very exciting. Let's bring it to one of our SMEs for a question, and maybe they're not all. I don't know. Is any business linked to some kind of product design and development, or is this very industry attached? Let's see what the next SME is. Pitch your business. Tell us who you are.
Hi, my name is Christopher Marlowe, and my business is basically in manufacturing. We have abundant creative fashion talent in South Africa. Why are we not seeing them in the mainstream market? The world is ready for new and innovative ideas. Why are these ideas not on people's backs? My name is Christopher Marlowe, as I've said before, and my company, Monsieur Marlowe Manufacturing and Management, specializes in turning your idea or sketch into a garment that can be mass-produced, marketable, and sellable. We do sampling and small to medium-sized quantity production and other value-added services. So call me or mail me, and let's talk about your idea. My number is 082-8422-551.
All right. So yeah. If I was going to hear your name one more time. All right. That's the pitch. Alice, quickly on the pitch, and then if you have a question... then you just throw that at the panel.
I think Christopher needs to change jobs. He's got such a great voice for radio. Wonderful, delivery there. I love it.
Calm and relaxed.
Your question?
Yes, my question is for Brian. Earlier on in the discussion, you were speaking about sort of product design being a mix of a number of factors, and you spoke about technology as being one of the factors in there. Considering our context, in Africa and, infrastructure, the infrastructure problems that we are having, what do you think, or how much of a role do you think technology plays in it being a barrier for, young designers or young clothing designers to sort of really break into the market and, get their products and clothing out there?
I would rather like to think that it's not a barrier. I'd like to think that technology could be a gateway and basically enhance the young designers and the designs themselves as a gateway. If it's embraced correctly, you can quantum leap and leapfrog over traditional processes and invent a new solution. And I think for those who care to research the technology of the day and take advantage of that, there lies the great key for success. And that's what I did in my business, where we aligned ourselves with technology. For 36 years ago, I aligned myself religiously, fanatically to technology. And from that point of view, we gave ourselves many, many quantum leaps, and we've outgunned and had world firsts out of my small studio in Bryanston when we were only still in Bryanston. We had world firsts in many areas driven by technology. So I'd highly recommend that they take serious attention to technology. And also, I mentioned body tech and body electronics. Garments are what we wear. Flexible photovoltaic panel. Photovoltaic is a fancy word for what we would know as solar power. Those panels you see in glass. Now, a South African invention from a professor at UJ, I think it was, and a solder technology, but invented. So the very invention of flexible solar power in photovoltaic PV, let's call it for the discussion, came right from here. So there's a local technology that if someone researched themselves properly, a jacket with solar power, flexible material, will power all your smart devices and a lot more. So there's a wonderful solution. And, you know, people have done that. You see solar panels on handbags and that. But certainly it doesn't stop at just the flexible photovoltaic. I would like to see us wearing stuff that doesn't even resemble what we're wearing right now in 5 years' time, because what we're doing now and what we're holding in our hands is nothing going to be resembling what we do now. So I think the opportunity is to get ahead, jump on the crest of the wave and surf the cutting edge, and there'll be the solution for the youngsters, and it will work and it will happen. It definitely will.
Okay, we need to wrap up. A quick question I was asked to ask you on what's the system here?
WeChat.
WeChat. I was going to say WhatsApp. On WeChat, ask your guest what he thinks of the teachings of Jacques Fresco, a social engineer.
I don't know. I must be honest. I don't know Jacques Fresco, but okay.
All right. So there's no immediate.
Yeah, apologies for that.
Now, if you don't know, then I don't know who will. But maybe it's on a different field. Let's wrap up. Any final thoughts before we go to our SME interview with a local jeweler?
I have a question for Brian. One of the companies that I admire for product design, obviously, you know, is your Herman Miller.
Wonderful company.
I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Very familiar. Yes.
At what point can we be able here in this region to get to that scale of you know, evocative design, functionality?
Well, I must give you an honest answer there. I designed a desk, and company Acuna, if we are mentioning brand names, we outgunned the Herman Miller furniture on for the last 10 years with a range called Scala. Mm-hmm. And now that's made in Springs. So I am saying that we have matched.
Fantastic.
We have matched the appropriate solution. Uh-huh. And we that sold over R1 billion in production just locally in the last 10, 12 years. And so, you know, whereas Herman Miller is a great brand, they and there's many more. There's wonderful.
They probably have a bigger marketing budget for their stories to get
about 1,000 times bigger. Okay. So we like to consider ourselves as stealth solution, where we're Exocet missile, where we penetrate thick armor and we make a big impact the other side, and we disrupt markets. Okay. And we now have a desk which we now would like to say make €1 billion out of in the next 10 years rather than R1 billion. And now we're going to a global market, and that's where I have a big global strategy in my business, how we roll it out globally. Mm. But so I can say we have done it, and we can all do it. South Africa's got wonderful entrepreneurship, creative solutions and capability that sadly we have a lot of moving parts here and distractions that sometimes distract. So we need to focus and actually do what we're doing correctly.
And if anyone is interested, you know, to see the kind of work, what do they have to do? I mean, obviously there's a design expo in Cape Town, but are there other platforms? Are there websites? Is there an association with more?
Very difficult. There's been a number of associations that have misfired on the startup because it's such an unknown soldier. Mm-hmm. And it's very difficult to navigate. A lot of Google stuff. You need to just Google, you know, there's certainly quite a bit under my name, and design as such is across the board. Design and Dob are a great catalyst for design in this country as well.
Thank you.
So we're just trying to get our SME, who's a designer and a product developer, on the line. Just your advice, your tip to small businesses, when you look at the future and you're right there on the fringe, and they're just struggling to run a bed and breakfast or a small jewelry store or just trying to take it to the next level. You seem to be very strong on the technology thing. That if you can really tap into that, that is one of the enablers that can make you leapfrog into years ahead of your competitor. Or
absolutely. You know, just look at apps on smartphones. The result of the phone in Africa is unsurpassed. I mean, what phones did in Africa and smart devices. So there, right in the center of your face, is technology. And then unlocking through technology and design, a design process, I think are the two really key factors, although sounding biased again.
Okay. We're going to keep pulling you in the next 20-25 minutes. We've got our SME on the line, so we'll go there in a moment. Quick break, and we'll be back with our SME interview. Find out from this man who started with nothing. I think he's from Soweto. And just talk to him about a very interesting, innovative business I think he's got. He links to visitors from overseas. It sounds fascinating. He's been in our audience before, And today he's our guest here. It's a pity he's not in the studio, but let's do the best we can. So stay with us.
This is CliffCentral.com.